And we'll be finding out how one Oxfordshire man decided to trade in his holiday to China when the earthquake struck the Sichuan province to help with the relief work that was ongoing. His story, what he saw, the reaction that he was met with on heading out there, and much more, all here on The Afternoon Show with me, Jo Tunis, between now and four.
I'm coming back home.
Michael Bublé and Home. We've got Take That, the Carpenters and the Lighthouse Family all on the way here on BBC Oxford. Now, you remember probably earlier in this year when the news broke of an earthquake measuring 7.9 on the Richter scale hitting the Sichuan province of China. Over 69,000 people were killed in the tragedy, and the world turns its attention to the recovery process. John Henshaw from Stanford in the Vale was planning at the time to visit friends in China, but following the news of the earthquake, he traded in his tourist plans to go and help with the relief efforts, raising over £1,000 to help victims in the area, especially school children. John got back from the trip last week and joins us now this afternoon to tell us a little bit more about what he saw and the incredible people that he met. Thank you very much for coming in. It's been a busy time for you because on your way back from China, you popped into San Francisco as well, I believe.
Yes, another earthquake centre. And my company is called Epicenter, so maybe I'm tempting Providence.
Yeah. How long can we have you in the studio and it remains safe? I'm a little bit worried. Now, tell us about the initial trip to China, because as I said, you were going over there to visit friends, weren't you?
I was, yeah. I've got a number of Chinese friends, having been there 7 times in 2 years. I think it's the most fantastic place. It's had not very good press, mainly because of the governments of the West, who think that it's a vile place to go. But it's an incredible place to go. And I was going to Chengdu, which is as far from Beijing as we are from Rome.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's a big country.
Yeah.
And I was going there for the first time, and then the earthquake happened. And Chengdu is where they breed pandas. So if you want to see pandas, you can see baby pandas, adult pandas, tiny little baby ones, because they breed them there. And there's lots of other attractions. And it's the main place to go to Tibet from. And I've been to Tibet a couple of times. And the travel agent in Chengdu remembered me, Angie Wong. And I'd booked to go, and there was the earthquake happened. And people said, well, you're not going, are you? I said, yeah, why not? Of course I'm going. And I spoke to Angie, and said, and her business was at zero because nobody was traveling there. Mm. And I said, you know, what do you think? Can you arrange something? And she said, I'll find out what schools need things. So we decided to go primarily to schools, school children, who had lost their parents, lost their schools, lost everything, and try and give them a smile for the day.
So you were here in Oxfordshire when you first heard the news of the earthquake.
It was my son Johnny's 21st birthday, 12th of June. I remember it.
Yeah.
I was down in Brighton seeing him at university. And it was, yeah, I went. The only odd thing was I'd planned to go KLM via Amsterdam because they fly direct to Chengdu. And they cancelled 3 out of 4 of the flights. They said, haven't you heard? There's been an earthquake. But there was no damage in Chengdu, which is only a few miles from the epicentre. But that city was mercifully not affected, although there were big tremors there.
Mm.
But no vast damage on the scale just up the road.
So you found out via your travel agent the sort of people that you could help and the relief that was required. I remember at the time that there was a bit of stop-startedness in the relief efforts because particularly from sort of Westerners going in and photographers going in, the Chinese were a little reserved about what was happening. So were you allowed to get in there and easily, or were you there ostensibly
as a tourist? No problem getting
into
China. None at all. But a little reserved, that is putting it mildly. They are paranoid because of the Olympics coming up, and they're very suspicious. And at one point, when we were going to one of the schools, we were stopped at a police road check, and they saw not my big professional camera hanging around my neck, but a tiny little video camera on the seat beside me, and asked if I was a journalist, and made us wait there. Then Angie discovered that the school we wanted to go to was just before this checkpoint, so there was no problem.
Mm.
When we got there, the school was controlled by by the military because there were people living in tents in the grounds, and they very quickly melted when they discovered what we were there to do. But make no mistake, the Chinese government reacted immediately. The premier was on the plane within a couple of hours. You know, I mean, it was a great show of leadership, and he has gained a lot of respect in China as a result of doing that. But there were soldiers everywhere, marching down the roads with shovels over their shoulders, and already building lots and lots of temporary homes, these blue and white things. So, you know, the bulldozers were leveling it and building those. Compare that with Burma, or compare that with what would happen in England. You know, you'd have Gordon Brown on the radio saying, oh, we're going to get it together as soon as we can. They did it. It was remarkable.
That must have been quite an amazing thing to actually see firsthand, how a nation swung into action there.
There was, you know, I've always worked in television, but it just brought it home to me that what you see are selective shots in two dimensions. And when you're there in 3D, you see that some parts, there's no damage, and then a few yards on, it's utter devastation. And this goes on for mile after mile after mile. The affected area is the size of Portugal, and the homeless are the size of the population of Norway, to give you some idea. Mm. And this earthquake, 7.9 on the Richter scale, means nothing to me. A guy in California described it as like living on jello, you know, jelly, the way the ground moves, and there's nothing you can do about it. But it's... this was felt by friends of mine in Beijing, and Beijing is as far from Chengdu as Oxford is from Rome, exactly the same distance. So it's like Oxford has to vacate all their buildings because there's been an earthquake in Rome.
Yeah.
You know, the scale is the incredible thing. And to see it in 3D, experience it, go through it, smell it, is something that you don't do, and I didn't intend to do.
Right, and you did actually experience it too, because you were there when there were still the aftershocks, weren't you? But you slept through them.
I really wish I could say, wow, the earth moved in Chengdu, but I didn't feel one aftershock. I wasn't aware of it.
But everybody was very nervous at that stage, weren't they?
One of my friends in Chengdu, Ting Ting, and her mother was really worried about it, and they slept night after night in a park, sleeping in the car. But there was, I saw one building flattened in Chengdu, and I said, wow, there's, but no, it was demolition. And that's what it looked like. Most of the buildings in the countryside just looked as if they'd been demolished. There was a pile of rubbish, and you would see a supermarket, and it was a pile of rubble maybe 6 or 8 feet high. You knew there must be bodies underneath there. The scale of the problem was so huge that they couldn't possibly go and search for everyone. But I still think they did a remarkable job.
Mm. You were primarily focusing on the schools and the children in the area. What sort of things were they needing? What were you faced with when you went to visit?
Everything. And not only that, but Angie, a fantastic English speaker, a lot of experience. She knew that we should also take ladies' requisites as well, you know. So it was really good like that. And we went to, I said, let's go to Carrefour, which is the French supermarket chain. It's got one there. And I'd have been around there and thought, wow, look at the prices of these compared with Tesco's in England. It's a tenth of the price. But she said, oh, no, that's far too expensive. We'll go to the wholesale market. And we went to the wholesale market where things were just pence. And so what I thought might be a calf load of stuff actually turned out to be two vanfuls of goodies to give away. And one of the first places we went to was a mosque. And there was a British charity there called Muslim Hands, but there were Chinese representatives of it. And the first thing they did was invite us to lunch. Mm-hmm. And they were cooking in these enormous woks, and they were looking after 40 families in the grounds. And the mosque had been damaged. And a lady showed me her cell phone, and I didn't understand what it was. And then Angie translated, and it was a picture of her 11-year-old son who was killed in the school. Mm-hmm. And I had to fight the tears back. Mm-hmm. You know, there were a few things like that. The imam in his 80s was injured, broken arm, and so on. But they were still welcoming, as the Chinese always are, and they're always pleased to see foreigners, the real people and the country people.
And in the face of adversity, you must have seen some incredible sights. I know there was a barber who really caught your attention at one point.
I was in my hairdresser in Wantage yesterday, Stephen style, and I said, I'm going to give you a picture, because it was just rubble, and he had built an improvised tent at one side, and then at the other side there was some shelter from the sun in the form of a sort of outside waiting room, and then he was cutting hair in the middle. I couldn't believe it. I mean, talk about the show must go on, or business must go on. But then this is the Chinese. You know, I thought that they were terrible grey communists, but in fact they're bigger capitalists than us or the Americans. They work. I have a friend in Beijing who's a tour guide, Kathleen, and I've never known anybody work so hard. She gets up at 4 or 5 in the morning, meets people at the airport, and doesn't get back till 11 o'clock at night, and doesn't complain about it. And her total income is unbelievably low, but she supports her family, who are a peasant family out in the country, whose annual income is something like £1,000 in our terms. So it's, you know, it's a completely different economy, one which is becoming very disparate, because a lot of the people in Beijing now are very rich. I sat on a plane to China a few trips ago next to a Chinese girl, and when the duty-free came round, she opened her purse and she had 3 gold cards in it, and she was at school in England.
Wow.
Her father was the concessionaire for one of the major European automobile manufacturers in Beijing, so they definitely had money.
Yeah. You managed to get to Beijing as well, didn't you? What was it like on the eve of the Olympics? Because the whole world's going to be focused on the next 21, 22 days or so. How, as a city, is it prepared? Is it ready in your eyes?
Yes,
is there
it
an
is.
Air of excitement?
And I can't understand, you know, I cringe when I hear bad press about China, even the pollution, because we used to have pollution far worse than that was. I don't know what they're going to do about it. It's moved in 20 years from nobody having a car to lots of people having a car. A friend of mine in Beijing who works at the Forbidden City is a curator of paintings and calligraphy, Troy. He's adopted an English name. Li Tianying is his Chinese name.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd have stayed with that, actually.
Pardon?
I think I'd have stayed with the traditional name, with his Chinese name. I think I like that better.
I like to use them,
yeah.
Because, you know, Kathleen is Zia Hunkun, and I didn't realise for a long time, like with Mao Zedong, that Mao is his surname. They put the surname the other way around. But they all adopt English-sounding names, which I think is a bit of a pity, really.
Yeah.
It's, he's got a car, and I think that car was about £3,000. So, you know, everything makes you think about what the costs are like in the West, I can tell you that.
Yeah, very much so.
But you asked about what the Olympics is going to do. I wouldn't go near myself while the Olympics are on. The security is going to be incredible in case they have any problems. Mm-hmm. They definitely don't want that. But I just hope the Americans don't tip the taxi drivers, because taxis in Beijing are cheap and you do not tip. And if they start giving them big tips, like I think happened in Africa, next time they'll be expecting the tips. It'll ruin it.
Well, the whole world is going to be focused on Beijing very soon indeed, and it'll be fascinating to see from just on TV what's going on there. You mentioned that you've travelled back and forth 7 times in the last 2 years. So it's obviously a country that has a huge attraction to you. And I imagine you've already got another plan up your sleeve.
Oh, I'll be going back.
Yeah.
The first time I went, I had 2 free tickets, British Airways business class, collecting BA miles, and also having a British Airways American Express card. And when you spent 10 grand, they give you the second ticket free. So I had enough a return business class ticket. And I thought, well, I'll take my daughter, Annalise, who works here in social services in Oxford. And she loved it, British Airways business class. And we went for a week, and I thought, wow, it's going to be dangerous. And before I went, I met a guy in Orlando at a photography trade show called Don Franz. And I said, hey, Don, you're big in China now, aren't you? You've started a magazine there. And he said, I said, where should I go? And he said, well, I've never done it a tourist bit. I've only been to business meetings. But this is Edith Liu, my Chinese representative. She'll arrange everything. And she said, oh, Mr. John, I've heard so much about you. When we got there, Troy Lee, the son of the editor of the Chinese magazine, was there to take us around the Forbidden City. And then we had Kathleen, a guide for the rest of the week. It was fantastic. I mean, and I thought, we're going somewhere really dangerous. Shall we go there, or South America, where my friend David Longworth, who was British Airways captain, had been held up at gunpoint for his watch. It was great. It was really great, and I couldn't believe how friendly everybody was. And my daughter is tall and blonde, like you, and everybody wanted them to hold their babies in Tiananmen Square and be photographed with them. And then this middle-aged lady came up to me, put her arm through mine, and her friend took a picture, and she left. And I thought, what? And then she beckoned to her friend, who reluctantly came and stood beside me. And then there were two other friends behind, and I said, well, come on, have a group shot. I thought, I'm enjoying this. And I asked Troy, I said, why do they want to be photographed with me? And he spoke to them. They came from a city 400 miles from Beijing. They'd never been to Beijing before. They'd never seen a foreigner before.
So quite an experience for them, as much as an experience for them as it was traveling to China for you. Have you managed to keep in touch with the projects that you saw since you've been back?
Oh, yes.
How are they doing?
I have. No, not the projects, actually. I mean, make no mistake, I'm not here to vie with importance with Oxfam or the Red Cross. But when you go there, you realize how little any of it is. It is so vast, the problem. You know, I said the area of Portugal, that every little bit counts. I haven't... the school we went to after the mosque, they wanted my passport to spell my name correctly, and they gave us a receipt for everything we gave. And the
very humbling, it must have been.
Well, the young lady who took my this is to avoid any corruption, so they knew who it was going to go out to, and the young lady who took my details turned out to be from the police. And we had gone over a bumpy, unmade road to get there, and she gave us a police escort back to the motorway. Mm-hmm. And with this receipt, Angie got her father and her boyfriend to drive the vehicles, which was great, and didn't charge anything at all. And this receipt gave us free access on the motorway. There was no toll to pay because we'd been doing relief effort, which... saved us maybe 50 pence.
An incredible experience. John, I know there's so much more I do want to talk to you, and I think we're going to have to get you back on the show, because your role as a travel photographer is another that I really do want to explore. But it's been great hearing your story and your Chinese adventure now that you're back here in Oxfordshire. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll definitely book you in again, because there's so many stories I think that you have to share with us. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. We're going to have to get the latest on the roads now with Paul.